morning and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. It's the 19th of November, 2012, and as promised on the last podcast, we have a surprise guest live in person. It's my main lover, Kirk Dalziel, who stopped in for a brief visit in Melbourne before he sets off to America. How are you, Kirk?
Oh, I'm very well. I just got back from a wedding in the fine country town of Trentham, and it was great. It was good fun. I imagine it's what Jay Cutler does on his bye week. I actually saw a grown woman suck milk from another woman's breast.
Wow.
It was incredible.
Standard night in Trentham then.
They hosted us well.
Yeah, yeah. Would you describe Trentham as cosmopolitan or metropolitan?
Well, we got told that we couldn't get soy milk there.
What?
They were not impressed that us city folk had come all the way on 45 minutes to Trentham to ask for some soy milk.
But you can get breast milk.
You can get breast... Oh, man, breast milk was getting handed out all over the joint.
So, yeah, I figured, seeing as you are about to head off to the United States of America, we could talk about why we love sport from the United States of America so much, because we dedicate a disgusting amount of our lives to watching it. So, is there any single word that you could sum up why you love American sport so much, Kirk?
Ooh, not a singular word, I don't think. The whole thing's just so epic. Like, the video games is what got me into it originally, playing Madden and those sort of things. But when you watch the game, it's such a such an experience in comparison to watching, say, a rugby game or an AFL game. There's so much fanfare and trumpets blaring and epic music. And I think a big part, especially for American football, is the sound of the pads smashing into each other. It's just so sexy and brutal.
Yeah, I think a lot of what you're describing is the fact that sport in America really is designed now with a TV audience in mind. I mean, they still get big crowds to games and all that, but the thing is, the whole structure of the way the sports are designed now has been rigged with that TV audience in mind. So you get all those timeouts and everything, but it allows for the TV viewing experience to be epic, which is obviously good for us because we don't really have the opportunity to see many live US sports, but we spend a lot of time watching it on TV. Do you reckon, what do you think you'd like to see adopted from that US model to Australian sports broadcast? Is it the intro music? Is that what you want to see change straight away?
I want to see a little bit of intro music as well. But that's what I love so much about it. Stop using Underbelly as your introduction for State of Origins. Stuff like that. Stop cross-promoting your own products. And also get commentators with really sexy voices. And listening to Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth talk to each other just gets me so wet.
Yeah, Sunday night football is very good. There just seems to be more of a career in America of having the, you know, play-by-play guys who are, you know, an artist of what they do. There are a few in Australia. Obviously, McAvaney is smooth. I mean, he's got a lot of charisma, but at least he knows what he's doing. You've got Rabs, although he's on the decline a little bit. He doesn't really know what's going on anymore, but his voice sounds amazing. There's guys on the ABC and that, but maybe if we saw a few more guys coming through who just spent their entire life drinking whiskey and smoking cigars and stuff so they sound amazing on TV, do you reckon that would make a difference?
I think so. You want a nice, gruff, gravelly, rough voice coming at you. Something really masculine and manly. So when he says something or somebody gets blown up in a big play, it sounds more dramatic and a little bit more exciting. But also, I'd like to see some more live. When you go to a game live, I'd like to see some better stuff there as well, because watching rugby league here is kind of depressing. I haven't watched a game in Sydney before, but when Storm Man comes running out in front of the Melbourne Storm games, it's not particularly exciting.
Yeah, Melbourne Storm home games really aren't a fair sample size for live rugby league, but it isn't great. I mean, they do more than the AFL does. They still have fireworks, they have cheerleaders, they have lots of music and stuff, which you can argue is good or not, but they actually try to do a bit more for the live experience, whereas the AFL atmosphere tends to be more organic. It's just, you know, these toothless fans who've turned up for 40 years in a row and who go mental every time the siren goes. That's kind of what generates atmosphere rather than any artificial thing that's thrown in.
There is one singular thing that Australian sport needs, though, Eric, to just make it better live and on TV.
What's that?
Just because you know it's occurring. Tailgating.
Yep, that's a good one. That's a good one. And yeah, it's the way that, I mean, especially in football, you've got the concept of Sunday is just the day. So you've got the whole day of sport to sit down, whereas in Australia, you've got Friday night, you've got Saturday afternoon, Saturday night games, Sunday afternoon games, but you don't really have those experiences where people can block out 9 hours, unless you're going to watch a test match, But 9 or 10 hours and just watch lots of things of the same sport, that, you know, overload really appeals to me when it comes to American football.
Oh, hell yeah. And if you can have a few games on at the same time, well, that's a great thing about Game Pass, and you have the score alerts up and you have four different games on at the same time and everything's just chaos.
Yeah.
Which is great. But I'm really looking forward to the tail. I'm going to watch the Buckeyes play Michigan, so there's going to be a big tailgating session there, and I can't think of anything better than some bloke parking his 4x4 that's probably bigger than my house, unfolding a grill and cooking a whole cow on it before we go in there.
So here's the thing, though. Like, tailgating's great in an American setting where these stadiums are generally outside the city or off in their own district where you've got 4 acres of car park surrounding the stadium. But most places in Australia, I mean, footy park's a bit different in Adelaide, but a lot of stadiums in Australia don't have the space to do that. They haven't really been designed with that concept in mind. Everyone gets to and from the game with public transport and, you know, goes back into the city to do other stuff. You'd like to see more atmosphere surrounded around the stadium before the game. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so, because especially when you're in... if you're going down to the MCG to see a game, and you all have beers in the city and then just kind of walk down, and that's kind of nice and everything, but everyone's spread out and dispersed, whereas the whole tailgating experience is to get a bunch of like-minded fans together and kick a footy around and have a barbecue and get the kids involved, and it just sounds like good fun having a few sherbets before you head in there.
One thing I will give the MCG is it has the black reggae guy who does 4 hours of the Collingwood song in some dub reggae cover with a bass guitar. So he's great. He sells CDs. You can buy him. So I'll give him that. But yeah, you're right. You mentioned before League Pass. This is, for me, probably my biggest gripe with Australian sport, is the lack of my ability to see a lot of Australian sport without Foxtel. I don't want to have to pay for the Lifestyle Channel and for Food Network and all this other stuff. I just want to watch sport. So if the AFL or the NRL or Super Rugby could sell me the ability to watch sport online when I want it on demand, I'd do it for every sport. I would give them my money. And they just, the fact that they don't have that, I mean, the AFL's got this weird system where if you're an Optus customer, or you can kind of get it on your 3G, but that's not really a good system in my opinion. It should be open and just, if you've got an internet connection, we will give you our sport. It's another avenue.
And it's great if you can't see the... can't see the game live because it's during the day and you've got things to do. You can come home that night, open up the laptop, and away you go. You can replay it, try and avoid all the scores, etc., so you still get that live experience. But the Game Pass is incredible. I love it. And then you can put little documentaries and other things in there as well to help to promote the sport and create some sort of fan following of, because those NFL Network programs that they're producing are incredible.
Yeah, I'd like to get back to the NFL Network later, because I think that's a real strength that sport has. But one other thing you get with League Pass that you that is just incredible, or Game Pass rather, the NFL version, is the Red Zone channel. Just outstanding. It's basically just the distillation of all the good bits of football with no ads for the whole day, just touchdowns and scoring and highlight reels. And you can get the quad screen where you get four games going at once. It's exceptional. And the AFL does seem to avoid trying to have too many overlapping games at once, which makes sense because of the way their broadcasting works. They're mostly on free-to-air TV and radio, so they want people to be able to see as much as possible. But that kind of smorgasbord approach really does make a nice contrast to the Australian approach.
I think so as well. And rugby and rugby league certainly limit themselves by having a lot of games on Foxtel, although Channel 9 does cover the rugby, but you very rarely get it. And
oh, you get it. It's just on at 3 in the morning after two bad movies on Gem.
So I think the AFL has done a really good job of keeping the AFL as a free-to-air sport so they can promote it to the masses, whereas rugby has limited itself, and same with rugby league. And something like a Game Pass will help bring it to the public in a much more accessible fashion, I think.
Well, the other thing that the Game Pass will give them is money. I don't understand what that would do. I am prevented from giving the AFL my money right now because of their approach. Like, they are stopping me from giving them cash. It's very, very strange. But yeah, you mentioned it before. It's another thing that has really been a strength for the NFL, especially when you're trying to introduce people to it, is the NFL Network, which actually started as a separate thing 40 or 50 years ago, when some guys bought the rights to all the film of old NFL games because the NFL thought it was useless and kept them all. So you have records of all these old football games, which allows you to then compile all these incredible montages and highlight reels with these, you know, excellent voiceover artists and great scores that have been done for them. And it really, really helps, us coming as outsiders to a sport, it really helps you understand the culture and the history of the game because they've got video records of it that they preserve with such love.
And especially when they start showing the footage of them playing in the snow and it's in slow motion and guys are getting belted everywhere and the steam rising up and you've got some guy talking over it that sounds like he smokes two packs a day and bathes in scotch. It really gets the emotion flowing.
Well, yeah, and like, you know, if we come to the game now, you look at the Oakland Raiders, say, and they just seem like a joke and a bit of a weird franchise and you don't understand why they have such a strong following still. And then you go back and you watch, you know, the footage of the 1980s LA Raiders when Madden was there and you kind of can, yeah, you can come to understand the full depth of the team's history is in a really interesting way. I mean, I find it quite difficult at times to understand the history of some AFL teams and some rugby league teams because there's no real collections of no collated history there. But yeah, it also explains the culture. You know, you've got those awesome montages of crazy defensive linemen from the 1960s and all this stuff, which it's really evocative.
Yeah, and you get all the personalities of the sport as well, like the Fridge and the Bus.
Yeah.
And all those sort of guys, and you get the Steel Curtain. Oh, shit, is it the Steel Curtain?
Yeah, the Steel Curtain.
Yeah, you get the Steel Curtain, all those sort of things. You're right, you do learn a lot about the game. So if you're coming into AFL, you could probably turn it on, have a look, and see the progress of Carlton's last 40 years of rebuilding.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, you know, some things have been tried to do. Like SEN has its classic grand finals thing through the finals campaign where they'll constantly be running highlight reels of old grand finals. But there's just no dedication to it that you see when you look at the NBA, NFL. And even that stands out in the context of American sport because the NBA has a bit of it, but even that doesn't really have the record. Because just the fact that someone they've just got this warehouse full of every single game played for the last 50 or 60 years of the NFL is such an asset.
And I think you can get to the stage where they've got a football life as well, which is really good. And they followed Ray Lewis through a season. I mean, I think that that sport in Australia is very, well, I don't know if secular is the right word, but there's a big gap between the fans and what actually goes on in the club. So you don't have shows like Hard Knocks or anything like that, where you can actually see what goes on behind team doors and how teams prepare and what people have to do to get into that sort of shape and how incredible these athletes are. And then you get to see the real characters of the game. And somebody like Ray Lewis, obviously, who's an incredible public speaker, really gets the blood pumping.
Yeah. So yeah, Football Life is the, you know, weekly documentary series that the NFL puts on, the NFL Network puts on during the season. And they're fantastic. I mean, they did one on Belichick last year, which was really interesting to watch. But all this does as well is this is all different things that surround the sport and build it up into something more than just the experience of watching the game every week. And the AFL and other sports obviously do that with the footy show and with all these other things. But those are all purely focused on what happens really on the ground. There's no, like you said, there's no exploration of what it's like to be a player in the league or to be a coach or what's happened to a team over a long period of time. There's more, you know, more step back, more larger scope documentaries, I think, add a lot to the culture of the sport, and it's something that is really missing in Australia.
And you learn about great events. Watching that Cleveland 95 one, you suddenly learn about how much the team means to the town and the city, and you wonder whether that's actually the case in most of the cities in Australia and New Zealand, whether they actually care about their sports team that much, because you haven't had one bail, obviously. But you could follow teams and you could learn about them, and somebody coming to the game can learn the history and the characters within it, and it'd be... It's an incredible idea, and they can make a lot of money by doing it, but they just don't seem to want to expand or do anything different. It's very stagnant.
Well, there is a different culture of sport watching in America as well, where they're more interested in things other than just what happens on the field. Australian sports fans seem to be very, you know, basic in what they expect from their sports journalism. They just want the results. They just want to read about players and numbers and all that kind of stuff, whereas it's not so much... you know, the more higher emotional, you know, cultural stuff that Americans seem to dig into more. But this has all so far been quite focused on the NFL, and I think there are other strengths that different American sports bring as well. Like, I think that the NBA is the best managed league I've ever seen. I think the way that they've constructed that brand over the last 20 years is amazing. I mean, the advertising... just the branding of the whole league, the control they have over what, you know, players can and can't do, and the way that they've just, yeah, built all these little identities around the nation. And that's very much been an artificial one, whereas the NFL has been more organic and the, you know, the teams are really deep-rooted in cities' identities, whereas the NBA's have been mostly expansion concepts that have been built up. But I think the NBA does an excellent job of that sort of branding.
Yeah, I think it's good as well. And they promote their finals really well, which is a big part of it. That's how I got into watching that Lakers-Celtics final back in... Fuck, when was it?
08.
Back in 08. And that really got me excited. But they pumped it up and it just really got you... drew you in. I mean, I didn't have a fascination for either team, but suddenly I liked the Celtics, and they told you all about the history and how the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson days and the Russell days and all that sort of stuff. But on a league-wide note, you are correct. They do it very well. And in terms of keeping things under wraps, so you get more malice in the palace and that sort of stuff. And then David Stern just controls everything.
Yeah, he's done a very, very good job, Stern. And yeah, the advertising, whoever does the league's advertising has been great. There have been so many great campaigns. I mean, there was the one from a couple of years ago with the split faces where they had guys for the NBA finals talking about, you know, their experiences, saying the same lines, but, you know, Kobe on one side, Steve Nash on the other, something like that. Obviously, you had, you know, the This Is Where Magic Happens and all those kind of ads. You had the slow-mo ads, which I think was that season that you're talking about.
Yeah, Where Amazing Happens.
Yeah, Where Amazing Happens. I mean, that ad they had for the start of the season at Christmas last year where they had current players superimposed into old footage where you had, like, Kobe high-fiving Magic Johnson. Well, that was extraordinary. And all these things, although they sound a little bit trite, do a lot in terms of bringing people to your sport. This is how you create a bigger audience for your sport, because people get attracted to... you can't expect them to just think, oh, rugby league's cool, I'm going to watch that. They need to be drawn in by things other than just the brand itself.
I think so as well. They did a really good job of when they did have the superstar of basketball, Michael Jordan, promoting him really well and using him to expand into other markets, into Asia and into Europe, and really a basketball flowing around the world. And then it's obviously the elite level, and with the expansion of having European players playing in there and Asian players as well, the brand itself has just exploded, which is great. Whereas rugby still seems stuck in the same traditions and in the same areas, and cricket's much the same as well. That hasn't particularly expanded too far, so I don't know if expansion is the key, but there needs to be some more promotion and more marketing, I think.
Yeah, you don't need to put, you know, players, you know, all around the world, but you need to find a way of, you know, if some guy in Canada switches on a cricket game in the middle of the night, there needs to be a way for him to get drawn to it for reasons other than his interest in, you know, how many guys are standing in the slips and, you know, someone sticking a key into the turf and all that kind of stuff. You need to look at a way of making sport more interesting to the outside as well, to the people inside.
Yeah, well, if you turned on late night coverage and got Channel 9's commentary team, you'd probably just walk out the back and hang yourself anyway.
Yeah. Yep. That's true.
I mean, and that becomes the next problem, is that you get commentators that are in there for 30 years or something like that, and it just becomes a bit tedious, and even they get a bit lax. I mean, it's no longer as fresh, and it's just the same crap over and over again. So,
well, I'm not against guys having long tenures as commentators, but they've got to be good.
Richie Benoit's been brilliant.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's plenty of American examples of guys who have, you know, like Al Michaels, have had very long careers doing lots of different sports, but they bring a work ethic to it and an enthusiasm that doesn't make it sound like they're bored and they just want to talk about what they did when they were playing 20 years ago.
Yeah, that is true.
So, what about stuff... What other things do we think are attractive, perhaps, about the structures of American sport that you could bring to Australia? Do you like the concept of free agency? Do you think that's...
I'm a huge fan of contracts, the salary cap structures and free agency. I think if free agency is something that really needs to get into Australian and New Zealand sport, and especially somewhere like the Super 15, where they say you can only have X amount of foreign players, would just open the gates. Who cares if your Australian player is good enough? Who cares if he's playing in New Zealand or South Africa for the season? At least he's getting some game time.
Yeah.
And just let people travel around. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a Canterbury Crusaders situation. And so you need a consistent, solid salary cap. The AFL needs free agency because they seem obsessed with just getting young guns and hoping like hell that they work. And people say, oh, it creates disloyalty and all the rest. And you think, well, hang on. If you're not getting paid enough for your job, are you going to sit around just because you want to thank the franchise or thank the organisation for employing you in the first place? No, you're going to chase the money that will secure you financially for the rest of your life. So if somebody like Goddard wants to go to Essendon because they're going to throw a truckload of money at him, it's just a smart life decision.
Yeah. The one argument I'd make against that claim, though, is, you know, outside of the... I mean, the NFL has very good parity. You often see, I mean, that's partially because of how crazy the playoffs are, but you see lots of different teams making the playoffs year in, year out. But, you know, the NBA has free agency and a reasonably strict salary cap, and there's a handful of teams that will ever have a shot at winning a title.
Well, I think basketball is different because it's only a five-man game. I mean, all you need is one or two really good players on your team, and you can create something quite special, whereas in AFL you have to get several players. You can't just have one good player. So free agency affords you the opportunity to get in multiple people, and it makes the competition a competition rather than Melbourne just stinking every year. They can at least dip into free agency, and the free agency should stem all the way down to people that are playing Waffle, Sandful, and all that sort of stuff, and pick up some gems for relatively cheap.
So one thing that I found during the Kurt Tippett saga, actually, which I'd really like to see brought over to Australian sport, is we have no idea how much these guys make. I want all player salaries to be public. I want to have a trade machine for the AFL. I want to be able to sit down and actually do the maths on how much cap space Sydney has and how much, you know, yeah, get rid of this guy, this guy, this guy. They can sign that guy a free agency. The kind of murkiness around it all with, you know, the third-party agreements and the way the salary caps sometimes work in Australia is clearly quite complicated. If you can simplify that and make it transparent, I think that'd be much more fun as a fan.
I've had this issue a couple of times, and I actually wrote an article about it a while ago. That simple fact, I thought, well, you can't create fanciful trades and discuss how your team can get better because you simply don't know what somebody's making. So you can't suddenly say, okay, well, let's get Kurt Tippett because he may be getting $600,000 a year and it's not even close to getting his salary cap. So it you can't analyse the game in that sort of fashion, which is incredibly frustrating because it then allows the public to become a general manager or a CEO of a team, and they can say, well, hold on, if we do this, and people can discuss those sort of things.
And what it also does is just, I'm a big believer in more information is better for your sport. Just give people as much information about your sport as possible, because then you get smarter bloggers, smarter analysis of your sport, more interesting things to read about your sport. Like, it's the same issue with the AFL locking all their stats up with Champion Data. You know, if you have all that information out there and all the player salaries and everything, you can have guys, there are people out there who'd want to dedicate their, you know, all their free time to try and to fix teams and write about all this different stuff. And the fact that, you know, with the salary caps or with anything else, they kind of keep it hidden from the fan, I think actually really hurts the general understanding of the sport.
And what also results out of that is you just end up with people like David Campese saying, fire the coach!
Yeah.
Without actually looking at anything. And he claims it was because they can't catch and pass. I'd say that they should probably have learnt that when they were 9 or 10, not when they're professional, international sportsmen. But yeah, it just then you get stuck with the same reports of how many kicks somebody got and how many passes, and you can sit there and say, well, is Gary Ablett really that good? And you can analyse other stats and what he's doing off the ball and what he's doing around the park, rather than he got 35 possessions. Well, that's great, but where did he get those possessions? Mm. And how did he use those possessions? And it's just it's a lack of knowledge on the part of lack of knowledge on part of the supporters, because we aren't being given the information. Just give us the information.
Yeah, and I think that really does underscore probably one of my biggest gripes with the difference between Australian sport and American sport. It's to do with the journalism. Just the quality of what you can read, even outside of a newspaper, there's just a sea of really interesting blogs and websites being dedicated to understanding the ins and outs of different sports, whether it's advanced stats or tactics or, you know, a site like Smart Football, the guy who sometimes, Chris Ryan, sometimes writes for Grantland, who will, you know, break down how plays work and, you know, the fact that, you know, teams, like that great article he did about option plays getting worked into the NFL this year. Like, all this stuff really augments the experience of a fan watching a sport because it makes them smarter, and it just, it adds little foibles. If my choice as a fan is to sit down and read, you know, an ex-player writing an article in The Age on Friday about, you know, blah, 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 and then an ex-player doing the analysis, you know, with very rudimentary stats and not a lot of understanding of how to deliver them during the game, and then an ex-player, maybe a broadcaster afterwards, talking about, oh, I just love the way he plays and I love the way he goes about it, and just all this really vague stuff. It really frustrates me because I'd love to understand why teams do the things they do, and there's plenty of information that the teams have which we just don't know. If we could really improve the information that we get and then the journalism that surrounds these sports, And like I said before, I'm certain there's lots of people out there who want to do this. I think it would make the discourse that we get about, you know, rugby league, football, whatever, it would just make it so much better.
I love reading Bill Barnwell's stuff, yeah, because he gets stuck into the stats. And
yeah, well, he came from Football Outsiders, which is, yeah, one of the best sites you can
and
read.
So
about
he can
football.
He can tell you how, why it's different or how it's changed statistically and what's really going on. And it helps you understand why a team stinks or why they're getting better or why they've stagnated or anything like that. But maybe the AFL and the NRL and the Australia and the ARL just think ignorance is bliss. Perhaps they don't want their fans to be so educated. And especially, I imagine, CEOs of teams and wouldn't want the fans to become too clued on because then they maybe seem to be inept.
Yeah. Yeah. And Football Outsiders does do a lot of good stuff. And, you know, some of the numbers they dig up are great. And even if you disagree with it, even if you're somebody who doesn't think stats tell you everything about sport and, you know, you think that we don't need more of that, you don't have to agree with it to make it interesting. You can read an article that you totally disagree with, but if it's a well-constructed and well-thought-through argument, that still improves your understanding of your sport. It still makes it all this interesting stuff outside of just player profiles, basic statistical breakdowns, you know, this team hasn't won on this ground for X amount of years and, you know, this guy's having his 150th game. I mean, that seems to be the majority of what you read in websites and on papers now around Australian sport.
Probably explain why I read a lot of American websites rather than Australian. I don't follow the sports journalism here much at all either, or from New Zealand, because like you said, it's all just much of the same.
Well, and you know what, the sport I think that could benefit the most from this, and probably the sport that does the best job of it, is cricket. Because there's, you know, obviously it's a statistician's dream as a sport, and they do a good job of kind of looking at the history of the sport in broadcasts, and it seems like you can draw parallels between current era players and past era players in cricket better than in other sports. So if they could, yeah, really start to kick up the production of some of the, you know, statistical and journalistic values around cricket, I think it would make it so much more of an interesting sport to watch.
Well, you get some interesting concepts coming out of it as well, and it gets to more of the areas that we're talking about. And I remember listening to one when India were here last year, one of the Indian commentators came in and he was talking about averages. And he said, what you shouldn't look at is the average itself, but look at how often the player scores around that average.
Yeah.
So is the player either scoring 2 or 5 runs and then 100 runs, or is he scoring sort of 30 to 60 regularly, which is a lot more beneficial than having 3 poor games and then 1 big score?
Yeah.
So you can get different concepts and different ways of looking at a player, and suddenly you think, oh, well, maybe his average of 40 isn't so bad, or his average of 38 isn't so bad because he's regularly getting runs rather than doing a Dave Warner and doing a feast or famine.
Well, I think the best example I can give for the dichotomy here between Australia, and this is more international rather than American, but still, it was when I watched the Wimbledon final, and it was, I just got a stream of it over the internet, and, you know, normally, if you watch the pre-match broadcast of the Australian Open here, even on the final, it's pretty basic. It's, you know, here's a montage of how they got here. Here's the matches they won. Here's the record that, you know, when they've played against each other and blah, blah, blah. Here's a temperature. Here's a shot of Melbourne. This other one, it was a Eurosport channel, and it was insane. It was, here's the average depth that, you know, Nadal hits to this player. Here's the average height of him hitting it here. If he can move him to this part of the court, his accuracy of his shots drops from this percentage to this percentage. He likes to serve to this quadrant of the court. So if he can position himself here, he's not going to be able to hit to his advantage. All this really interesting information, which I didn't know, it was obviously someone who spent a lot of work breaking it down, and it was terrific, and it was eye-opening because largely experiencing, you know, tennis broadcasts through the prism of Channel 7, I hadn't even considered that this was a possibility, and it was terrific.
No, because often with the TV broadcast, what you think is that it's just two blokes belting a ball at each other until one of them misses.
Yeah.
But you're right, that was incredible, and they'd do the side-on shots where they'd turn around and show you where he was, how deep he was when he was hitting them, and then it'd show Federer was right up on the line, and Nadal was way back, and the different styles, and where they hit each ball, and how they could change it. It was incredible. The whole new knowledge base of tennis that I didn't even have. I didn't even know it existed, that it got that complex.
All right. Let's stop being too negative on Australian sport, because I think there are some strengths that it has comparatively to the American model. the one I'd probably name first and foremost is the general parity you see in Australian sport. I mean, up until they stuck in the Gold Coast Titans in the NRL, every team had made the grand final. And in the AFL, it's, you know, you see a reasonable turnover of teams, you know, making the grand final and being premiership chances and kind of cracking that top four. You've seen expansion teams in both major codes in Australia, in Sydney and the Melbourne Storm, winning premierships and having strong patches. So, you know, as somebody who watches the Toronto Raptors on a reasonably regular basis, you know, we see all these teams in basically every league in America who just look like they don't really have a shot.
Yeah, you're right. I think the Australian leagues have done it really well, where you can, you're going to have your peaks and your troughs, but everyone seems to average out. There's never usually a consistently bad team and then a consistently dominant team.
Well, you have your Richmond Tigers and teams like that, but
they were good once.
But the truth is, even over the last 20 years, there are the systems in places to make them good. They've had their opportunities. They've just screwed them up. You at least are given a shot in Australian sport.
Yeah, but then you can see somebody like Geelong who had a 40-year drought and then won three premierships. Three.
Yeah,
and then they'll probably have a dry spell for a little while again. So you just peak and trough. It's just when you get that chance, don't do a Western Bulldogs and make the semi-finals every year.
Yeah. And so I think that's a strength, certainly, of Australian sport, is just that general parity and the fact that they do actually also, with their expansion teams, they do give them, you know, in the AFL at least, they give them the salary cap exemptions and they try to give them a bit of a push. They give them all those draft picks. So there is a little bit of help provided there. Another thing I think is a big strength of Australian sport is the lack of... just the culture of where the players come from. I mean, the reality is, in, you know, a lot of high-profile American sports people come from broken homes, come from the ghetto. So, they get crime introduced into the major sports. And even though you have guys in Australia coming from the country and coming from Aboriginal areas and, you know, coming from perhaps disadvantaged backgrounds, it doesn't seem to be like it's a guarantee that you're going to have, you know, gang involvement and all this really unsavoury elements brought into your sport.
I think there's a bigger concept of team in Australian sports professionally, where teams are joined together and they travel together and they live together and they trade together. Whereas America, American sports, especially American football, you have three separate teams completely.
Yeah.
So guys probably won't even train together over a season or get to know each other or anything like that. And there's also a pretty significant hierarchy in terms of how you're getting paid. So the top paid players probably won't talk to somebody that's on special teams or associate with them. Whereas there's a greater team aspect where everyone knows each other and everyone... Not an equal, obviously, because the more experienced players, your veterans are going to be the big dogs, but a better culture of team.
Yeah. Perhaps both of these issues we're talking about that Australia has the advantage on is just to do with the lower player salaries. Because as soon as you start getting those huge gulfs in place, if I'm getting $16 million a year and you're getting 400 grand, that's a big gap. And, you know, if I'm getting $16 million a year, then I'm probably going to attract some shady characters into my life. So that, I mean, and that's American football. I mean, you get into baseball and it gets even crazier, obviously, with player salary. So perhaps just the fact that, although they're still high, the salaries that sportsmen get in Australia aren't insane, might leave it a little bit more grounded and a little bit more relaxed atmosphere around the sport.
That'd probably be right, because I can tell you, if I win Lotto tomorrow, I'm not talking to you again.
Great.
I'll go buy Channel 9 and sack all the commentators.
Well, you probably wouldn't need to win a lot to buy Channel 9 right now. They're in strife financially.
Let's just have it in a wheelbarrow at the back.
Yeah.
Garage sale.
So you are going to fly up tomorrow morning to go to America, Kirk. What's your? What are the three things you're looking forward to the most?
Jay Cutler.
Okay, so that's the day that you land. You fly straight to San Francisco to see...
49ers Bears.
Are you sure that Jay Cutler's going to play?
Oh, he's going to play. He's going to play. Even if he just stands on the side, I don't care. As long as he stands on the side and it looks like a drunken idiot, then that's all I care. If he smokes a little bit, that'd be good too.
Yeah, so Jay Cutler smoking, that's number one.
Boston, watching the Boston Celtics is going to be another highlight as well. Yep. I would have liked to have seen Ray Allen, but just to see KG, Paul Pierce and Rondo tear it up, it would be really good fun. And Green Bay. I think going to Green Bay and seeing how crazy that town is going to be really good, because I actually didn't book a room until a couple of days ago, and I booked the last room in Green Bay. I had to share a bed with a guy.
You're sharing a bed with a man?
I have to share a bed with Luke. Our first night in America together, and he flies into Green Bay, and we're sharing a king-size bed.
And you're going to a Packers game?
Yeah, Packers-Texans.
Wow. That's a Sunday night game?
It's a Sunday night game. We fly out after the game. It's a Sunday afternoon game, sorry. Lunchtime, okay. Sunday afternoon. But yeah, there was one room left in the whole of Green Bay.
That'll be extraordinary.
Oh, it'll be great. But that just shows you how insane that team and its group of supporters are, because it's publicly owned, obviously. But,
yeah.
So that's going to be the highlight. We've got really good seats for it, and hopefully I can see some extraordinary things happen.
Yeah, that'll...
I want it to snow.
Are you going to go to Favre Drive or Favre Street or whatever
I'm going to go to... Luke said, what are we going to do in Green Bay? I said, there's nothing else to do other than go to Favre Steakhouse and eat numerous animals and drink beer until we fall into a coma. So that's going
to
be our first night.
You have to try and tailgate that. Just rock up to some dude's tailgate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They'll tailgate the shit out of it. Play Marco Polo with Brett Favre. Where is he? Get him out here. See him throw into triple coverage in a car park.
I'm not sure if he's welcome there anymore.
Ah, who cares?
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a lot more fun than what I'll be doing over the next couple of months, so I'm jealous.
Well, I'll make sure I call you and update you regularly.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll be able to get a feature visit on the podcast while you're away.
Yeah, we'll see how we go. If I'm travelling too much or if I'm dragging myself out of the gutter too many times, I don't know if I'll be able to do it, but we'll work something out.
We'll try and get you on the expensive satellite phone from America. Anyway, that'll be enough for today, I reckon. We've put down Australia for long enough, so we might get deported. You might have to go back to New Zealand. So we look forward to your return in a little bit over a month's time, back to civilization, hopefully with all 10 fingers and toes, depending on how much money you lose in Las Vegas. But I will be back later on this week with a little bit of a podcast about the AFL draft. It's something that does confuse the hell out of me, so I'm looking forward to having our resident AFL dude, Sam McInerney, explain it to me. Until then, you can follow this podcast at sportspolygamy.com. You can also subscribe on Facebook and iTunes to keep track. If you've got any feedback, leave it on the blog or on the Facebook page. We'd love to hear it. Until then, I'm Eric George.
I'm Kirk Gelsinger.
And that's Sports Polygamy. See ya.